Hey everybody, this is Gaming My Whole Life, your host George speaking. Welcome to podcast number 11. Today we have Jamel returning with us once again. How are you doing, buddy?
Here in high definition, high fidelity sound. It's amazing.
Let's not go that far.
Wait, who's that extra voice that no one's heard before?
Oh, sounds like someone needs an introduction.
Do we do the Smash Bros thing? It's like, new challenger. Hi, I'm Lewis.
We will do that from now on. Yes, new challenger, Lewis from Player One Sin.
I'm the executive producer of a radio show / half podcast, because we podcast our show, I guess, for a student youth network or Sin called Player One, where we talk video games, pop culture, all that kind of stuff. Bam.
Nice. So, sounded like a perfect fit to join our group. Yes. And also another gentleman who's been silently waiting his turn. Jay's back. How you doing, Jabbo?
Good, mate. How about you?
Doing well, mate. Doing well.
Pleased to see my old friend again, Jay.
I sure did. Well, it's
never too long for you, mate.
Like Jabba the Hutt?
Wow. What a pleasure.
It's a little bit of a nickname, which we have for Jay. I'll keep professional. Jay. Sorry. All right.
No, I'm okay. He's got a green shirt on, so I can remember Jabba the Hutt.
Done.
That works. All right, so today I wanted to have a bit of a discussion with you gentlemen, and that is the art of balancing games. So what do I mean by that exactly? As we all know, games are made up of many components. You have the art, you have the programming, you have the sound, yada yada. And if you have too much going on and it requires system resources, well, then your game will start lagging and not having a good frame rate, so to say. What I wanted to discuss and get everyone's opinion is to really appreciate the work that goes behind it and how a game may not be as simple as it appears. So, for example, we'll look at any sort of colorful game. So we'll look at a Blizzard game, so Diablo 3. For those of you who have played it, obviously a lot goes on at the screen at any one time. You can have the corpses of zombies and so forth flying everywhere, ragdoll physics. Now, it's not the most visually demanding game. Like, you don't look at it and think, wow, this is state-of-the-art or realistic. However, if you look behind the scenes and keep in mind that everybody that goes flying, you have the ragdoll physics, you have the preset animations, you have the AI, and the fact that the developers have gotten all that to work together at the same time, on a technical achievement level, it may actually be more impressive than a realistic first-person shooter, who in a screenshot will look more real, but the fact is there, maybe you just have a gun that's rendered.
Behind the scenes, yeah. You have an AI that is on every other character on the screen, and it's the one AI, and they have a set path, and then that is find the PC, the playable character.
Yeah.
And that's about it. They tout physics engines, and they tout all that kind of stuff, but a physics engine in itself is a relatively simple thing.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, some of these games have multiple engines going off at once, and they're all coming together. Staying with Blizzard, but StarCraft 1
yep.
had an update 18 years after the game came out.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Because of a frame rate issue, where on the back end of things, like, you wouldn't be able to tell, because you're just on the loading screen.
Yeah.
But the loading screen was uncapped for frame rate. So the loading screen would eventually get to a couple of thousand frames per second and just boot your computer.
That's actually really funny.
Yeah.
And that is great to know. I love the behind the scenes stuff like that.
Like, games are these really weird, fickle things where you need a perfect set of circumstances to come together, where you need it to look nice, have fun components, come out at a right time, and just be presentable in a way for it to actually sell, I guess.
And to actually look good and be enjoyable. Going back to, like, that's a really good point. Can I go back to Diablo 3 for a second? Because that game is actually beautiful. I remember when we were first seeing screenshots of that, and it had this fantastic art style. Like, I actually enjoy it. I'm actually becoming George now. But when when I was seeing the first screenshots of that game, you would be looking at, like, the landscape, and it looked like someone got a brush and went and just made this game happen. It's actually a really well done game, Diablo 3.
Oh, artistically, it is absolutely beautiful, and it's just a little bit underappreciated. Jay, you've spent a lot of time playing Diablo 3 with me. I've spent hundreds of hours with you, and you've played 10 times more than that, so God help me how much you've played. What are your thoughts on this, mate? You've spent a lot of time playing this game.
Yeah, look, I mean, I guess I'm sucked in a little bit because I played probably Diablo 2 a lot more. So if you're looking comparison, yeah, it's a lot nicer looking game.
Oh,
but
Diablo 2.
Oh, no. Yeah, I love it. but yeah, I don't know. It's when I first saw the screenshots of it, obviously coming from number two, I thought it was a massive upgrade. So I guess I was sucked in.
Giant.
Really? Yeah, exactly. Going, yeah. Oh, what? This is amazing. So,
yeah.
But then, I mean, I remember even in number two, the cutscenes were just like so beautiful in comparison, and you're just shocked by it, how good it is. So,
even StarCraft, the original one, when you saw the cutscenes, like for the time when that game came out, that was like revolutionary.
Well,
StarCraft
was beautiful. That's the thing with pre-rendered cutscenes, though. The benefit of having pre-rendered cutscenes is you have this gorgeous thing. Final Fantasy VII is the biggest.
Yeah, that was my next example. Yeah.
You have these gorgeous cutscenes.
And then block characters.
But yeah, that's the risk you take. Back then we were able to compartmentalize more. And when we were playing Final Fantasy VII when it came out, and we were playing Diablo, we're able to go between what the game looks like and then having these cutscenes, which helps your imagination a bit. It's like, even though I'm seeing these block characters, I can see this.
Yeah.
Mm. Where now we're playing games where everything is 4K HD. The cutscenes are the same as the screen. Whereas if you do have a pre-rendered cutscene, it does risk taking you out of the game. And unfortunately, kids these days, their attention span is not long enough to be like, oh, I'm out of the game now. Oh, I'm back in the game now.
Yeah.
What happened?
Kids, he says.
Yeah.
It's a night and day difference. Like, even a lot of our listeners right now, you say pre-rendered, you know, they're like, what are you talking about?
Yes,
like, is it lighted? Is it, like, what is pre-rendered, you know?
And I guess for the sake of that, just for anybody that doesn't know, a pre-rendered cutscene is just a cutscene that doesn't use the in-game engine as a cutscene. It's animated outside of the engine, or it's using engine assets, but it's not animated within the game.
Yeah. It doesn't use real-time lighting, so that's all pre-rendered.
It's all pre-done, and it's made to look really pretty for you, so the cutscene works.
Do you know who's the king of that, though? Square Enix.
Yeah, Square Enix.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Do you guys remember the Final Fantasy movie that came out in cinemas? Like, when they first debuted that technology?
Yeah, the very first one.
Weren't you?
Yeah. No, I wasn't.
were you swimming around in some man's junk?
I was still a fetus.
Twinkle in the eye.
That movie, when that first came out, Spirits Within, that's right.
That was mind-blowing.
Well, that was 2 hours of a pre-rendered cutscene.
Yeah, exactly. It was. Right. Exactly. Yeah. It was.
And there was a bit, there's parts in that movie when I was looking at it going, like, that's a person.
That's a real-life person.
Yeah, that's a real-life person. I was like, that was insane when that first
came out. Yeah, but then we came all the way back around with Rogue One when they had Peter Cushing on the screen, and it's just like, you look too real.
The uncanny
you're
valley.
Obviously fake.
Yeah.
And it was the eyes that did it for me. Like, they had these little muscle movements in his eyes. I'm
See,
like, yeah, they're not real.
Actually, that's interesting you bring that up, because the uncanny valley, that effect you're talking about where something looks so close to human
that it can't be real.
Yeah, and it jars you, and it really affects some people to the point where they actually reckon that if we ever do create androids or artificial humans or whatever, that when we see them, there's an idea that you should make them look really inhuman, so that it doesn't cause that effect and make people react violently. Because they reckon that people will react like violently at a really psychological level.
Well, that brings up a game that I want to mention back, going back to like the combination of art and mechanics and everything else.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's get back on topic.
Have you guys ever played? Have you guys ever played Child of Light?
No,
but I do know about it. It does look amazing.
Get on that game.
Yeah.
It's old now, unfortunately, but like it's cheap on Steam, probably.
Ubisoft did that game,
didn't
they?
Yes, Ubisoft Montreal. What they did was they took all of the concept art and just put it in the game. Like, people did these amazing, magnificent water paintings of these beautiful landscapes and stuff, and the water paintings are in the game.
That's awesome.
The mechanics are great. The battle mechanic is on a timeline, and it's really fun and interesting to do. It's got a little brother two-player mode where, like, if you have, like a sibling or someone who's not that into games but you want to play games with, they can control this little character.
So it's like the Tales of Sonic.
Yeah, pretty much. And, excuse me. And
showing your age there.
We had,
show my wisdom.
Back to the uncanny thing as well is they learned that, and the same with movies, when they did Foley for sounds, for example, wings beating. If you record the sound of a bird's wings beating, our ears won't hear that. Our ears don't like that. It'll sound fake to us. Okay. But if you get a bunch of flowers and clap those flowers together really fast, that's wings beating to us. So in Child of Light, you can go onto YouTube and go to Ubisoft's YouTube page and watch these little documentaries of how they made the game.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a documentary, like a little 3-minute thing on how they did Foley, where it's like, we need to find sounds that sounded real to everybody that weren't actually the real thing.
Ah, okay.
And like, so it's just, they went above and beyond for this little 20-hour RPG-ish kind of game.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the best game I've ever played.
But like, that goes into like a point we were discussing recently where people really appreciate games when the developers go to extraordinary, not necessarily extraordinary lengths, but like when you make the effort to go the extra mile, you can always tell. You can always tell in the game when someone's gone the extra mile. Like StarCraft, Blizzard made the game twice.
Every Blizzard game.
Except for Heroes of the Storm.
Not every Blizzard game.
Really? The card game. Defend the card game.
We have some Hearthstone fans here. It's Jamil.
Hey, man, the heart of the cards is real. The heart of the cards is real.
I guess every other game company has now copied that because we've got a Fable card game, we've got a Gwent. Skyrim card
Gwent.
Game.
Yeah,
got,
big one.
Yeah, Gwent. Yeah, I haven't played Gwent yet. I have to check.
Stop it. Just stop. Don't put money into that.
I'm not going to.
If you put money into that, you're fired.
I will hire you and then I will fire you.
There's a previous point we made in the episode regarding, we were discussing gameplay and graphics.
Yep.
I think it was a Assassin's Creed game where there's pirate ships.
Black Flag. You mean Pirate's Creed?
Oh, whatever.
At that point.
I mean,
it was Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, sandbox games that aren't The Witcher boring. Anyway. Because they're boring, but we were discussing about. We were talking about how George is a fan of water physics. Basically, if there was pool or river, the game George would buy it.
Okay, no, but those
unlimited hours into that one.
Yeah, you just got told. Look, water physics are great, but water and fire physics are the bane of a developer's existence.
Yeah,
because they will just eat frames. Like that will cook a system. Because it's like having 1,000 characters on screen.
Yeah, but
so you win, George. See, that's why I appreciate it.
Having great water physics and great water rendering is great and all.
Yes,
but if you don't do anything with it besides have it look pretty, like in one corner of the screen, if you run over there, it's a waste.
I'm fine with that. It's a waste. With little, it's like having a little like little Easter eggs and stuff. Like little Easter eggs are wastes of space too. But they're fun.
But having water in a corner is not an Easter egg, okay? It's just a thing that takes up system resources.
Okay, if it has water no gameplay is never purpose. A waste of time. George will find it and George will swim.
You've spent enough time you've spent enough time around speedrunning where you should know now that if you're not looking at it, it's not loaded. It's not taking up resource space. Because that's why in Mario speedruns they do things backwards, so it unloads things. So like in the direction you're going, it's not really loaded.
That is true.
So it can't slow down the game. That. Saves frames, guys.
Save the frames.
I feel it does add to the level of immersion. Like I understand Jamil's point of view because he's pointed this out several times that if
he won't get over this, guys. Oh,
I don't mean to. My wording made it sound worse than what it was.
No, that's bad.
But what I mean is he appreciates a feature to have some sort of function in regards to the game itself. So if something looks good, that's awesome, but he wants it to affect the gameplay. In another sense, though, and myself included, even though I don't care that much about graphics, at the same time, I'm also a sucker for it if he does something which hasn't been done before. So I'm going to ignore that Jamil's not having like a bit of a stroke as he hears me says I'm not a...
George is lying.
But I appreciate the small details. Like Assassin's Creed Origins, when the boat goes through the water, it actually ripples it and pushes it about.
Okay,
that is amazing.
What about when the camera goes through the player character and just shows you their eyes and teeth because that game was just an atrocious mess.
Oh, trust me.
Do you want skin? DLC.
Do you want a save game?
I'm sorry to derail your topics because I know you had like a list of topics, but that does bring up a point of what is more important in a game? Is it functionality?
Yes.
And gameplay?
Yes.
No one asked you.
Or is it story and immersion? What is more important? Because like, so we got Beck playing the part of Chem's mother. She's already beat him twice for like swiveling on his chair.
I like to move.
And she's agreeing with me heavily where like, I didn't give an opinion. I just asked a question, but like Beck over there says, immersion and story, which is the water in the corner that isn't functional.
No, it's not.
is that more important than functionality in gameplay?
No. Story and immersion is more important, but water in the corner is not.
That's immersion. No. That's building a world.
No.
Nope.
No, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about having water.
Yeah, face the microphone.
We're talking about water.
I tried to avoid saying
rippling in unnecessary ways unless it performs a function in the immersion and the gameplay.
Listen here, okay? I'm getting serious.
Grab the mic.
Okay, now hear me out. Ready? If I walked into that corner and it's just this dry scrubland, yeah, and I'm like, you know what this could use? This water. Could use a puddle of water, right? But it's not there. I've been taken out of the immersion process.
I love this man.
But hang on. You're taking my conversation about apples and talking about oranges now.
Okay. Now hear me out. Okay. So as part of this argument, yeah? Assassin's Creed. Beautiful games. Immersive games. Absolutely gorgeous. There's no functionality or gameplay. Like, there's no functionality. Those games are atrociously made. Coded poorly. Just... It's the same concept that
George's soul dying.
Barely. It's the same.
I'm actually not a huge Assassin's Creed fan.
Everyone's going to learn. I actively despise those games. Those games are just like running on a tight wire that barely works, and pressing the same buttons or pressing one button to change the function of the buttons.
Mm.
And like, I went to silently assassinate one person that I'm looking at right behind, walking behind. No, I assassinated the person to the left because the game just decided that. Like, the game's gorgeous, but they're not functional, and that makes me not want to play it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. That's actually why I have strong interests in Assassin's Creed Origins, because I actually played the first Assassin's Creed.
Mm.
I liked it, got bored of it, and every Assassin's Creed after that was rushed with a 6 to 12 month development cycle.
Exactly.
And came out horrible. The reason why I was interested in Origins is because Ubisoft for once acknowledged their errors and they said, look, we're going to give it some extra development time, see what happens with that. And all of
they just made DLC instead.
Well, yeah, pretty much. They lied there. But they did spend much more time on Origins than the others. And I want to support developers whenever they at least take a step in the right direction.
It's not perfect.
It's an attempt. But, you know... It does play better, though. Like, I played it at my friend's house, Theo, who's been on the show quite a number of times and would have been on the podcast directly before this. And, yeah, we played it. And this is the first Assassin's Creed throughout the whole series that I'm like, okay, I'm potentially interested in this, you know. But you're right. In the past, and Origins itself, I know there's bugs in that, but God help us, you know, with the floating skins and the teeth and...
Floating skins?
There were some horrible bugs in that game.
Like, people's skeletons would run off and you'd actually see the skin drop off them. It was like a horrible Terminator film. Wow. And Ubisoft's answer was, we'll patch it in later. It's like, it doesn't work like that.
And they didn't patch it in later as well.
And they did.
So they got 18 years to beat StarCraft.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The 20 years later, Origins patch 2.0 comes out.
Basically, all I was saying before was that if you're going to have cool, sick, rippling water and you're playing a pirate game, the cool, sick, rippling water should have something to do with the pirate game you're playing. That's all I was saying.
Yeah, you're in a world where there's water.
Yes.
But you're not on the great open sea.
Yes.
There's still puddles. Okay, we live in Australia. We're surrounded by water. But as we walked across the road to get to the studio, there was water on the road. Do you think we should remove that water?
That's not what I was saying.
Is that irrelevant?
Stop talking about oranges.
Is that not functional? What is your obsession with citrus?
It's tasty, and it's good for you. Drink.
Aren't you allergic to it?
Moving on. I actually found that very entertaining. So that's fine. I actually got lost into myself and looked down at my notes, and I'm like, hang on. There's some other things I wanted to discuss, and as always, very curious what Jamel has to say about this, but Jay as well. So I guess we can hear Louis up. We'll see how things go. Right. May run out of time. You know. Now jokes aside, I actually made a post on this on the Facebook group which we have. So Positive Gaming Space, and the post was it was a very simple one. It was basically a thank you. To all of the, we good with sound?
Yeah, we're good. Yep. We're good. I think I just had a stroke. Anyway, continue.
I can edit that out. It doesn't matter.
Power.
Okay. So what the post was about was the was gratitude to developers that are still focusing on single player experiences.
Mm.
I don't mean this as in a I hate online multiplayer games. If you're into that, that's fine. Louis doesn't like it. Just in case you're wondering who that soft whisper was.
It was Jay. The sweet nothings in our ear about hate.
And what the post did was basically, hey, thank you to, you know, Nintendo and to Bethesda and to CD Projekt Red, because we live in a world where game development costs hundreds of millions of dollars. And, you know, it's very easy to say, look, let's focus on online multiplayer because that's what people are interested in. If we're smart about it, we can include microtransactions and get a lot more bang for our buck. And, you know, as long as we do it good, people won't be angry. But these developers have said, no, this is what we do. This is what our fans expect of us, and they're still doing it. So I'm just glad that there are still developers doing it, because it is, at the end of the day, a business. And I can understand if even Nintendo said, hey, we've done our research and we could make like 20 times the money we do now if we shift the type of games we do. But instead, they're like, no, this maybe it's them being stubborn or whatever, putting their foot down, but here's the single-player experiences. We will work on the next Zelda for 5-6 years, whatever it takes. It makes no sense for any other company to spend that much time working on it, but we're still going to do it. And same with Bethesda, you know, with their Fallout games and so forth. Are there buggy experiences? Are these games perfect? Absolutely not, but it's just nice to see developers committed to the cause.
Well, so...
I know I said a lot there, I do that.
Playing contrarian for a second, Rockstar, first of all, ruined it for everyone. Because Rockstar brought out GTA Online and made $1 billion every 10 minutes on that. Not actually, but like they make about $1 billion a year. I think it was $1.6 billion last year
just from
shark cards and all that stuff.
Hang on, what are those shark cards?
Shark cards just give you in-game money.
Oh, right.
So you can do stuff.
Okay, yeah, cool.
And so you don't have to play the game. Yeah, pay to win, it's fine. But and like
it all starts somewhere.
Everybody saw this and were like, "Holy shit, we can make money off of." Oh crap, we can make money off of like monetary.
How
like,
is that better?
Because not being saying shit, God, George,
it's less poopy.
All right, we're going to have the first beep in the show.
Ready?
So like everyone's like, "Oh man, we can sell microtransactions and make money," and then EA were like, "We're gonna ride that to the moon," and it didn't go
behind the moon.
He's like, "They went to the moon, and then we disowned the moon."
Yeah, the moon wasn't making enough money.
Every company has
now it's off to Mars.
Every company has dipped their toes into microtransactions, except for CD Projekt Red. Really, Nintendo did it and failed with the mobile apps, because Mario Run was the first level was free, then you had to pay for the rest of the levels.
Yeah.
I did it with Fire Emblem Heroes, where you pay for like character cards and you can have microtransactions.
Oh, actually, there wasn't micros in that Mario game. You paid $10 for the game once outright, and then you got access to all of the levels.
Oh, okay. I believe you could pay for
individual levels
as well as the little toad thing, like the race thing. You could get tickets to
Maybe they added that later. I know when they first
$10 for a month. Of like you could do everything for that month, and then like right after that, it was microtransactioned up.
Evil empire.
No, not really, because like they dipped their toes, they failed, and like you know dig we're going to focus dig on
yeah, live and learn. That's it.
Full game content. EA has gone the hard way for that, where they've learned that if they dip their toes too far into microtransactions, they are stuck with a $40 game.
The thing with them is they haven't learned, and they're applying free to play practices to a paid game, which is what most people have the issue with. See, obviously I believe for bang for buck, whatever. I'm not against microtransactions for what they are. Like, I'm not against paying more in a game if you got the game for free in the first place. So, for example, me and Jay, we love Hearthstone, and that game is free to play. If you want to earn currency in the game and buy decks, you can do that. If you want to spend money... Yeah. You can do that, but you
have to.
You don't have to, and it isn't after you've paid $60 to get the game in the first place. And there isn't really a pay to win, because even if you get really good cards, if you don't know how to put them together, it means nothing.
Jay, let me come to you with this. Have you heard of Metal Gear Survive? It's the new Metal Gear game that came out. Do you know the issue with it? Have you seen the big hubbub?
No.
You haven't been stalking my page.
So,
no, sorry, mate.
Okay, you've played Metal Gear Survive. You have your save file with all of this really cool stuff on. You're like, you know what? I want to start a new save file. Would you pay $10 to start a new save file? Really? Because you know you have to pay $10 to start a new save file in Metal Gear Survive.
Yeah.
Unless you go over it. Like, is that too far?
Yes.
Yeah. You're paying for something which isn't additional content. So, like, DLCs is extra stuff. You want extra stuff, you pay for it. A save file, that's...
human rights.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's a game of human rights.
And I've had this argument, though, is like on the other end, people would pay for a new save file in Pokemon.
Wait. People argue? People have been arguing with you about this?
Well, let's go on 4chan and let's have a look. No, but like... seriously, like people would pay for another save file in Pokemon. Like, I would pay for a second save file in Pokemon.
I thought the second save file in Pokemon thing was just a hardware limitation because cartridges are sort of arcane.
Not anymore. If you can get a full 3D game on a cartridge,
I suppose there's an SD card in there.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like a 50 gig SD card in there.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
It is funny that you point that out, that people surprisingly argue with that point because...
they think Metal Gear's too far, but like there are certain... it's that Nintendo loyalty where they're like, if Nintendo did it, I'd do it.
Oh, to be honest, us Nintendo fans would burn them to the ground if they pulled that.
No, I wouldn't. Again, I would pay for another save file of Pokemon.
I absolutely wouldn't. Because I associate quality with them, and that is dodgy, not quality.
That is a thing, though, because people... Nintendo have this brand. Nintendo's brand is, we will make clean, polished games that will, you know, you'll buy it, it will be the whole experience, and you'll smash it, it'll be this wonderful fairy tale Peter Pan-like thing.
But you can only buy it on our console.
Exactly, and I'm going to talk about this.
And you know what that's called? Genius.
I was going to say,
that
like...
sells consoles.
It's good enough to
tyranny.
Sell
hardware. Bring out a Zelda game, a Mario game, a Metroid game, all at the same time, which are all single-player campaigns.
Yep.
And bring it out on one console... everyone will buy that console.
And they own it.
And everyone did. Yeah. Like, Breath of the Wild was that good that people went and did
it. I'm still playing that. I'm playing it for a year straight, and I bought my first ever Amiibo.
Oh, God.
And my one and only Amiibo. I will never own another one.
You say that now.
I'm pretty good with that, because I think Amiibos are stupid, but it was the only way from... And
they made you spend extra money with their evil tyranny.
Amiibos are microtransactions.
Yes, they are.
Yes.
Oh, God, I bought into Nintendo microtransactions.
Yes, you did.
It is a form of a microtransaction in a way. Oh, Louis. We broke him.
We got a man.
We broke Louis.
What have I done?
I've seen you. This is how crazy this is. I've seen this man survive 9 out of 10 pain with a horrific tumor. And do an escape room with me.
What have I done?
And he wasn't this broken.
Oh my God.
And do an escape room.
I just realized there's an armor set that you can get in Breath of the Wild, which is a Fierce Deity armor set from Majora's Mask. The only way you can unlock it is by having the Majora's Mask 30th anniversary. Well, the 20th anniversary, sorry. No, it was 30th, yeah. The Majora's Mask 30th anniversary amiibo.
Microtransaction.
God damn it.
There is some luck behind the amiibos. The way I look at it, because I'm not really a fan of it either, I think of it as an awesome way to get more figurines of game characters.
Well, yeah, it's toys.
Which is quite
detailed.
They're
just selling toys.
The thing that I like about it is if you happen to collect these just because, you know, you're a gamer and you like them and all that, and you know going forward that whatever random Nintendo game you get, you can probably use it.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's cool. Like, we used amiibos in Breath of the Wild, and we didn't go and buy them to get the things, just we already had them, so we're like, oh cool, and scan. And apart from that one item that you mentioned, you can manually get everything else in the game.
You don't need and you
makes it easier
as well,
but you can get it without, like, I've gotten all the
they were really armor. Good with that, because the Fierce Deity armor is just the Barbarian armor reskinned.
Yeah,
that's it. It's not different in any kind of functionality, so it's not pay to win. And it's not a microtransaction in the sense of, like, you get this, you are 10 times better. It's just, you get this.
You look better.
You look cool.
Yeah. It's a costume.
And I'm okay with those kind of paid things. Street Fighter has...
Which one?
Street Fighter's on the DS/PC, so right. 4 and up, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
You could pay for skins.
Yeah.
And it doesn't change the game.
But paying for skins is not a big deal. I did want to ask you, particularly yourself and... and Jay here about not just Street Fighter, but fighting games in general. Because when a fighting game comes out, sometimes there are characters that are already on the disc or on the in your download that you have to unlock using microtransactions. But what happens is they have, these days games have seasons, right? And you'll have the season one character, they'll have like the season one patch, and then they'll release a whole range of additional DLC characters, which you don't have to buy, you know, and technically the characters in fighting games aren't I win buttons, it's just different styles and gameplay stuff. Mm-hmm. But George and I have been talking recently about, we were spitballing about complete games, as in, imagine if they pass legislation in the States about this whole EA thing, where they say you cannot have an incomplete game upon release. It has to be the whole package. That's it. And that was just an idea we were just spitballing about.
Impossible.
It is. But how would you feel if you're going to buy a fighting game, both of you, where it was like, okay, I've paid my $60 to $100, because depending on which edition of a fighting game you buy, it's like $100 US on Steam.
The deluxe editions, but that comes with all the characters and the DLC and stuff. So you are buying the full game, which is the full game. It's a little bit more expensive than the game.
Yeah. Mm. And you have an option to buy part of the game without the extra characters, which are already there and already developed by them. You know, it's that thing of, if you were to buy a game like that, and then straight away it's like, hey, buy the season one pass to get all the characters that will eventually release. It's like, the effective price of the game I bought is now, like, if I don't buy the special edition, is $10, $15 more than I could have bought if I had the money at the time.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel as a consumer?
I don't know. I guess you could see people getting pretty salty very easily because, you're getting fed the extra stuff afterwards. And like you said, you just might not have that extra $10, $15 at the time, but you want it, and then you're paying $20 or $30 instead. And yeah, I don't know. To me, I don't like the idea of it. I'd rather it all come out, but I'm also a sucker for signing up to games in alpha and stuff. So, you know, maybe paying a little bit early on the chance that the game turns out all right, and rolling the dice that way.
What about you, Lewis?
See, the thing is, I'm not a normal consumer, is the issue, because I'm very...
Are you too hip?
I'm very heavily in the whole economic world of gaming and the whole business sense.
All right.
And I can try to put myself in the mind of a consumer where I'd say, hey, if I was looking to buy a game, if I was a parent buying a game for my child for Christmas, and I was told at the store, this game is $60, take it home, you can play it. Cool. Give it to my kid, and my kid's like, I need another $10 so I can have more characters. I'm like, wait, what did I just pay $60 for then?
Mm. Yeah.
I can see that side of the argument. But, I mean, Assassin's Creed, and going back to games that have full stories and are focusing on full stories, what makes a full game? What is a full game?
Start to finish the full package, you can buy it with the initial store price.
Okay, but then what if they bring out DLC? Then you didn't get a full game.
But that's the...
Or an expansion.
It's still not a full game then, because they're bringing out extra stuff.
But my definition of a full game, just stepping in for a moment, if that's all right.
Yeah. Okay.
I know.
Yeah, I would like to know. Yeah.
I know. But because I have actually thought about that question before. And, you know, DLC traditionally is, you know, extra content which was made after the fact.
Yes.
So obviously if modelers, if texturers, if animators, if all of that, if they're all working, they obviously get paid, you know, to do their job. Mm. So we need to pay for that. I get it. The issue which I have, and I believe it was Mortal Kombat, which was the famous example of, they came out with one of their games and they had Goro. Blocked, and
he was on the disc.
He was on the disc itself, but you had to pay extra to access him.
That was MK9.
MK9. There we go. So that sort of practice where it's already made.
I have an argument for that though.
Ooh,
like bring this it. Is the thing, because like this is back on Metal, the Mortal Kombat on the Xbox 360 as well, and Street Fighter on the Xbox 360 had a bunch of characters that were on the discs that were locked, and you could pay for them.
That annoys me so much.
You know why? Because the company from the get-go had a microtransaction in mind. They just didn't want you to waste your time downloading. So it's like, you don't have to download these characters. You pay for them, have them instantly. You don't have to download. And like, that in their mindset is, we were always going to charge you for these characters. It just means that you don't have to spend an hour waiting for this 3 GB download. Instead, it's right there. I'm not saying it's a full game, and I'm not saying it's great content. I'm just saying the reason they would do that is because they were always going to charge you for that character.
Mm. Oh, absolutely. It was definitely part
of the gameplay. And it was always an intention. It's just an easier way to distribute it without you having to download something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, an interesting approach which I've seen from Nintendo, actually, I did a bit of research recently into how they're going to entice gamers to get into the Nintendo Online program.
Mm.
Now, it costs X amount of dollars, you know, whatever comes out towards the end of the year.
$20?
$10, $20,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. $20.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been having a look at the online games they already have. So they have Splatoon, they have ARMS, and they've recently announced that there'll be a Smash Brothers towards the end of the year. They've got the
Mario Tennis as well, which is online.
Exactly, yeah.
Makes sense.
And what I like about Nintendo's approach is when you first buy an online game with them, they actually have an outright promise that for the first 3, 6, or 12 months, you'll get free content towards the games. And they've actually been doing that. So Splatoon and ARMS have continuously been getting free content and all that. But they have given us a heads up that down the line, like, hey, we may release a paid DLC. And they've announced that for Splatoon, it's an extension of the single player campaign. So they'll be coming for Splatoon. But I like the fact that, one, it is additional work. It's not something which was locked away. It's like, if you want it, cool, get it. If you don't, whatever. But you don't feel that you've been completely locked out, because at the same time that is launching, Nintendo's also still giving freebies for those that don't want to buy it. So I feel that's a better approach, as instead of buy Splatoon 2, that DLC is there at the side, but you can't access it. You know? Yeah.
Mm. I'm about to make Chairman really happy. Oh, I'm about to make you really happy. I'm about to question Nintendo.
Are you going to Diswater?
I've got a question for all of you.
Okay. Okay.
Breath of the Wild was about 120 hours of gameplay on release.
Yeah.
Huge game. You could get to the ending, all that stuff. Was that a full game on release? Knowing that they already announced 2 season passes at the same time as announcing the game. So they said, we have this game, we're releasing it, but we will have DLC later.
I will answer that last.
I haven't played Breath of the Wild. I don't own a Switch.
So it was a solid... You could get hundreds and hundreds of hours of gameplay.
Well, it depends.
And you could finish the story and everything.
On a fundamental level, I actually don't mind DLC. Mm-hmm. I don't even necessarily have a problem with microtransactions. Only in specific circumstances am I ever going to complain about a video game company whose purpose is to make money and pay for their employees and fund their future projects to make money.
How dare they?
Yeah. How dare they do that, right? In terms of, but here's the thing. Have they told us any details about what the season 1 and 2 pass is?
Well, they're out now, and there was this extra game content. There was extra stories, and there was extra content, and all that kind of stuff.
Is it the sequel to the story, or just a different story, like a side story?
It was additional gameplay. It was an additional story. It was like a...
They're just expansions. That's no big deal.
To you, they're still releasing a full game?
Okay.
I need a yes or no answer here, buddy. It's hard, isn't it?
Yes, it's a full game. Okay.
Yeah.
And
then they're doing like the Warcraft thing where they're releasing expansions, Frozen Throne.
As far as I can tell, because it's just an expansion, the original game. Here's where I would get annoyed about that is if you hit a point where it was like to be continued.
And then you had to pay for that.
Okay. Not counting a game like Life is Strange, where that's the point because it's episodic. That's different.
Okay.
How about you, Jay?
Yeah, I mean, if you put in that Warcraft sense, I mean, Frozen Throne was an expansion, completely different storyline. So to me, that does have a start and end to that story.
Hmm.
And I mean, 120 hours is extremely reasonable.
Extremely reasonable.
It's a good start.
You can also beat the game in 30 minutes if you want to, so it's fine.
Yeah.
There's been a speed run.
Yeah. So to me, that counts as it. Completed game, and if you want more content, you're more than happy to. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people couldn't stomach the full game and won't get it, but I'm sure there's a lot that will.
So. Yeah, it's optional and it doesn't detract. Okay.
Fair enough. I'd like to buy that game eventually and a Switch, but
it's worth it.
You really should. If a game is overhyped, I instinctively don't like it. Like, I don't know why. It's like, no, they've talked about it too much. It's actually annoyed me. Whereas when I got it, I'm like, oh my goodness, this is actually as good as they say. Like, it felt weird to say. My thought on whether or not it's a completed game, knowing from day one that there'll be future DLCs, I do see it as a complete game. And the reason being is they've announced up front that they'll be working on additional content that doesn't yet exist. See, for me, that's where that fine line is. If I know, for me, it's all about work. If it's already been made or you're getting in-game currency, something which the developers don't need to work extra on, I don't like paying extra money. But if they're going to do more work, then if I want that additional work, to me, it makes sense to pay for it.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm...
Devil's advocate?
I'm going to play devil's advocate. I actually don't think it was a complete game coming out because of what we were waiting for this DLC.
Okay.
And like, yeah, we got to finish the game. You could beat Ganon, all that stuff. And the additional story stuff was a lot of fun. But if you're bringing out a game and they're saying, we have two things of DLC, you don't have a complete game.
Hmm.
And this is where I'm bringing back old mate EA here. EA hadn't released the game yet. And they said, we have this DLC where we're going to have these character packs and we're going to have this DLC, which is our story. So they preemptively announced, hey, we're doing extra stuff and we're working on extra stuff.
Yeah.
Does that mean Battlefront 2 was a complete game when it was released?
No.
But you've just said yes for Breath of the Wild.
Well,
I saw you stepping into that.
I feel like Breath of the Wild is a
That's why they call me back. Satan.
I waited. Unfortunately, the problem is, right, I know less about Breath of the Wild than I do about Battlefront.
Move your head around the microphone. It works like that.
Okay, works like that.
You want to look at me? Yeah.
Okay. I know less about Breath of the Wild, so I can't, you know... It's hard for me to definitively say yes to one and no for the other, I guess.
Yeah, okay. But,
because I don't know as much about those games.
What are you guys like? it's almost exactly, not exactly the same. I don't want to ruin any fans here, but like, it's kind of a similar situation where they were like, "We're bringing out the game, and we have all of this DLC happening." It's not the same kind of DLC. Cause it's not story content. It's just character content. But they were still saying, "We have this extra. We have all these extra characters coming out."
You know, if you use that logic, Dragon Age Inquisition wasn't a complete game.
It wasn't a complete game.
It wasn't.
I'm glad we sorted that out.
No, but I'd never thought of it before.
Bam! I'm
moving on.
What about Mass Effect 3?
Don't even get me started on those games. Like, Cerberus, all of those games.
And it looks like Jay had something to say.
No, keep going.
All of those games.
Never mind.
Would you say Battlefront 2? Is it a complete game then?
I'm not sure. I'm too scared to answer at this point. Yeah, I don't know. It comes down to, like, if you're talking 120 hours, that's complete for me. And if you pay extra, you pay extra.
So it's the hours, but
and I guess that's, hours, like you said, skill level too, because if you can get through it a bit quicker, that's different. But yeah. I don't know. If I play a game and you kind of, by the end of it, you're like, oh, geez, that was bloody short, then you're going to be a bit more annoyed.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you'd want more content. But, yeah, so I guess, and I mean, all four of us would have a different level of what is a good amount of time that a game gets us, and you know, so
absolutely, it would be how we personally feel about value for money. Like if we spend, so you know, we're here in Australia, so typically when a brand new game comes out, you get it on console,
$89.95 to $108.
Exactly. So on average, we can spend $100 on a game. So if we go out, and get, you know, if it's PC especially, it's a lot cheaper as well. Damn. But say you go ahead and you get a $100 game and it falls under a certain genre, whether it's fighting, whether it's RPG, open world, whatever, you have a preset expectation of how many gaming hours you would get out of that. So if you got an open world RPG and then it was 2 hours long, it could be the best 2 hours of your life. The Final Fantasy RPGs normally have intros that are longer than two. Exactly.
I love that game, though. I love that game so much.
So you have that expectation. So I don't think in that one respect, I feel they didn't do anything wrong with saying, hey, later on we're going to work on additional content, and if you want it, you have to pay for it.
I think the biggest issue people had was it was day one DLC. Like the DLC was released day one. Okay. It's like, we have this content and we have DLC and it's all coming out at the same time.
So that's purposely locked back, and Resulta everyone knows had that.
It come out 8 months later.
Exactly.
A year later.
Yeah, that's a bit different, I guess.
Exactly. And fanboyish schism, making up words aside.
I'm just glad you didn't call it fetishism, because we've got a whole different issue here.
No, that has already been covered in my podcast.
It has.
We've discussed my water fetish, fireplace fetish,
pool simulator.
pool simulator. Anything wet, but let's move on, please.
I do have a question to ask. Since we have, I've already asked Jay this question. I'm not sure if I've asked you this question. I know I haven't asked you this question, Lewis.
Yes, sir.
The pending Final Fantasy VII remake.
That's never coming in.
They're saying...
Don't lie to us.
If like what I'm hearing about it is that they're going to make a bunch of assets, right? The first game or the first episode of it, however you want to think of it, is going to be set in one area, like just the one city, Midgar.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm hearing it being put out there that all the assets that are developed for that game when they come out with episode two, game two, is going to be still reused, all the same engine and everything, but all gameplay could potentially be completely different. You know, and they might be like 30-hour adventures, so when you go through like five episodes of that, it turns into...
Did you dream this?
No, I've heard people
talking about this. Actually, no, I've heard of this. They said it's going to come out episodic, but each episode...
Jane, I look at you like, what the hell are you talking about?
That's like the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. Oh my God.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing about it.
I'm so excited for Square Enix to go out of business for this. Because no one's going to buy the first episode. What a waste. I'll just play Final Fantasy VII. I'll just play the original. I'm okay with blocky characters if I don't have to do this with episode 2 and 7. It's going to be Half-Life 3 all over again. People aren't going to buy episode 2, so no episode 3 is going to come out of Final Fantasy 7.
I don't like the idea of buying any game which is incomplete, because everyone plays games at different rates. I play them slowly, so if there's a 30-hour campaign, that will probably last me a month easy. That being said, I know people who will gun that, and if they start on Monday, Tuesday night, they're finished. And if you're going to tell them, hey, you need to wait 6 to 12 months for episode 2, and for the whole complete game, you're looking at like 6 years?
About that as well.
Yeah, like I know some episodic games do exist, like The Walking Dead by Telltales, and that was an issue I had. I purposely didn't buy the games until all of the episodes were out, so I can buy it. And we've already waited like 20-something years. For Final Fantasy VII, I don't want to wait another 20 years for them to get all the episodes out.
But see, like what I heard, like, you know, because we don't know 100% that's going to be the case yet. That's just stuff I've been hearing, you know, that people think may be happening or that's how they may be going about it.
Square said it. So unless they take
No. Well, not all of that is confirmed. You know, they said they're doing it episodically. You know, they haven't said they're going to be doing it different gameplay styles.
What we're saying is Square Enix is not one of the companies we can thank for bringing out a full game on release.
No.
Or a focused single player story.
No. Which 15 minutes ago we might have thought.
What do you think about the idea, who was it? Like Tetsuya Nomura or someone was like saying, if we tried to remake Final Fantasy VII stock standard, like say if we got the original game and just translated that into high fidelity graphics, standard, you know, modern things.
Like 10 discs.
Yeah, I reckon it would take them 10 years.
Just do it.
Like, we've already waited 20. We can wait another 10. But
Hey, Nintendo almost does that already for Zelda. So just, you know, step it up.
Yeah, they're bringing out 3D, man. They did Wind Waker HD. They did Twilight Princess HD, which was done here in Australia.
Could you imagine, like, that game would be 100 gigs if they did it like that?
I reckon it's just an excuse. I reckon it's just an excuse. Because this game came out during the PS1 era, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to have the best graphics that you can get today. It just has to be better. Oh. And that bar is really... low. We're talking blocky.
I think everybody focuses too much on graphics now. This game has ultra HD graphics and this wolf will rip your face off in HD. You can see the teeth. It's like, cool. I'm excited for this.
On 4K compatible TVs.
Exactly. I don't have a 4K TV. So why am I buying this?
Exactly.
The best screen I have in my house is my PC screen, which goes to 144 hertz, but like it still only goes to 1080p.
Oh my god,
I'm playing stuff at high frame rate because, you know, I'm a pro gamer.
Ooh.
But like, I'm not, I'm the worst at gaming. I don't have a 4K screen. I put my Switch into any of my screens. It's all HD, it's all 1080p.
I've never understood the whole resolution thing, because that's what 4K is. It's extra resolution. When I play games at 720p on the massive TV I have at home, things look good.
You're looking at each pixel.
It doesn't look bad, you know?
But you really don't need super fantastic graphics or like to make a game look good. Have you guys heard of...
good-looking water helps.
Sea of Thieves? No. I'm talking about it's a fighting game. Do you remember Street Fighter EX plus Alpha? Those games? Okay.
I remember that.
There was a game called Arika who had the contracts with Capcom to make all their 3D Street Fighter games, right?
Okay.
They actually fell out over Street Fighter 4 because of that. But they basically started making their own games, and they actually made like a little tech demo called, I think it's called Fighting Layer EX, but whatever the case is, right? And people went nuts for this game. And when you look at the game itself, everything is textured really nicely and pretty, so it looks good. But when you actually like pay attention to the graphics, they're really basic. But okay. You don't need super detailed graphics to make a game look nice.
Oh, absolutely. If you can cheat using an art form.
Like... Yeah, if you can cheat using textures and stuff like that. So, or like what Louis was saying.
Yeah, well, that goes back to what's more important, gameplay or like gameplay and functionality, or like story and look and in immersion.
I want it all. I reckon developers should work.
Well, you should buy Nintendo products then.
I certainly do, my good man.
This episode of Gaming for My Whole Life is brought to you by Nintendo. Did you know that 9 out of 10 doctors were for Nintendo?
And if Nintendo heard this, they'd send it a cease and desist and not let us make any money off it. Or if we streamed it, they would come down on us like a ton or a thousand ton of bricks.
You've been misled, my friend.
No. Nintendo are the evil empire.
Oh, that's Disney.
It is Disney and Nintendo. Disney,
yeah. I do one recording that isn't at my place and you turn on me. This is how it happens.
Beck's ready to murder me about Disney. Disney is the worst thing ever. Yeah. And you know what else is, you know, even worse than
I'm not going to save
Lion
you.
Lion King. I'm just making all of your listeners.
I'm not
going to
save you. Oh, Kingdom Hearts. So Square Enix and Disney.
I hate Kingdom Hearts so much.
Oh, that was disappointing. The Lion King was awesome.
The first Kingdom Hearts was pretty magical. I'm sorry. George, what is the next topic? What is the next topic, George?
The next topic is rounding up the podcast.
You know,
it's an intervention
actually,
order, I'm pretty sure.
I just realised something.
It's my disclaimer that the following people will not return. Everyone.
Me.
I just realised there's a tradition when we have having a guest that we forgot to follow. We have to ask Louis.
Okay.
What is your background in gaming? How did you get started? From when you were a little child to now?
No shit.
What he said.
Who said that? Listen here, Jake! You're gonna bang the desk! I'm really... You gotta have fun editing this. my first console was a Super Nintendo at my Alma's house. And then my brother and I, we were hanging out downstairs one day. And like we had this old like wooden cabinet with our CRT TV.
Oh,
and we were looking for VCRs. And we opened the drawer. And there's a Nintendo 64 in there. We lose our little goddamn minds. It's like, wow, what is this? Holy crap, there's Lilac Wars in there. My dad's like, oh yeah, I bought that yesterday. That's mine. And I'm like,
communal.
Exactly. So like we had a Nintendo 64 and then I grew up with the 64. PlayStation 1 came out and I didn't get that. PlayStation 2 came out and I got that at the end of its life. And like we would buy consoles at the end of their life because it was cheaper. And,
Yep.
We weren't going to spend exorbitant amounts of money. And then once I had a disposable income, I now own every single console to date except for a GameCube.
You're not missing much.
I grew up... GameCube's trash. But like my gaming...
Love the GameCube.
There you go, that sponsorship from Nintendo.
Even Nintendo thinks the GameCube's crap. Why do you think they haven't remade any of those games yet?
He doesn't mean it. He does not mean it.
But like, I guess I've hugely been into Nintendo. And up until... about 5 years ago, I was just like heavily Nintendo PC, but now my gaming is switched to speedrunning, and speedrunning is my life in gaming.
That is your passion.
It is a heavy passion of mine where I almost have an encyclopedic knowledge of some speedruns. I can't perform them myself, but I know how they work because I like the technical side of things, and I just don't have the dexterity for it or the patience.
You got me into speedruns.
Yeah, through packs, luckily, I've been able to get.
Yeah, and I was one of Louis's little helpers.
And I at the moment I speedrun Mega Man X,
Breath of
the Wild. I can get in about 45 minutes or so, and Skyrim is my main speedrun.
Oh wow!
Because it's just a lot. It's a broken game. You pick up a bowl, walk into a wall, and you walk through the wall, and you're halfway through the tutorial. And you get to the Thalmor Embassy, which is about halfway through the game in the first 40 minutes, first half an hour. Oh, sorry. depending on how good at the run you are.
Yeah.
So I pick up speedrunning by watching GDQ, like the Games Done Quick events, mm-hmm. and just it became my life after that. So now I'll play any game. I'll argue for any game. I love games. I've been playing a lot of Overwatch lately.
Okay.
Sport games are a fun feat, but yeah, I've been gaming literally my whole life because I've been.
Well, you're on the right show then.
You're on the right podcast.
You guys grow up. You guys, because you're all old. you guys.
Old
consoles were just like starting to really become a major thing. When I hit that peak where as they were becoming popular, I was turning 10, 11, 12.
Mm.
And as they were becoming mainstream-ish, like it's only really hit its peak now, but they were starting the uptick as I was hitting into those developmental ages. So like, I had a Game Boy because my family lived up in Wangaratta, which is, for all you international listeners, we're in Melbourne, 3 hours north into the country.
Mm.
I would have my Game Boy and I would play Pokemon Silver, and then once it hit dark... Oh, I would sleep because I was a kid, but like I had all that stuff. I had an SP, like, so I could have my portable games, like mainly Pokemon and Zelda with when I was growing up, and then yeah, it just kind of expanded from there.
Nice.
That's me. I'm a utility.
Yes. By the way, everyone should support GDQ. They do great things for charity.
Yeah, $10 million over 5 years now for charity.
Which is phenomenal, right?
And the most recent one, we hit the 2.2, I think, or 2.1, something like that.
It was something
for
ridiculous.
Prevent Cancer Foundation. July 7th, July 15th, or something like that, is the next GDQ. If you go to gamesdonequick.com, you can find all that. Mm-hmm. They do amazing speedruns of childhood games that I didn't even know existed, but then they have these huge cult fan bases, mm-hmm. like Battletoads.
Battletoads was great. Yeah,
you guys, I wasn't born when that game came out, so it's gone over my radar because that game came out in 1992, I believe.
Mm.
So yeah, it went well over my head, but it has this huge following and people love the speedrun of it. And
Super Punch Out.
It's a Super Punch Out. There's
a lot of classics.
This last GDQ that went by. They're trying to innovate and bring in more of an audience, which is fair.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They had the world record holder for Mike Tyson's Punch Out and Super Punch Out speedrun both of those games at the same time, exact same time, using one controller. So they had an interface that splits a Super Nintendo controller to plug it into the NES, and the SNES had both games start at the same time and do the speedrun of both those games at the same time.
I want to watch that.
It only goes for 20 minutes, so once we finish recording, I can literally show you.
Yeah,
that actually sounds amazing.
The blindfolded one, where two guys race each other playing Super Punch Out blindfolded.
So yeah, that's my background.
I appreciate the skill behind speedruns. I've never really cared about them, to be honest. However, the few times which I've gone to Link and someone's like, "Hey, check it out," I will look at it, and within 5 seconds, I'm like, "You are so beyond me. I cannot replicate." Anything like I saw a speed run on Mirror's Edge,
yeah,
and the guy was like,
"Those runs are amazing."
He was jumping sideways and doing little flips I hadn't seen before, and I'm like, "He's been doing this for like an hour."
Mirror's Edge is a really good game for introducing people to speedrunning because you learn that these people are absolutely encroached in their games. They know the code. They know. Yeah. They know the development phases. They know the game inside and out, and they are passionate about these games. They love these games. And indie devs now are really getting into the speedrunning, where like a lot of indie games now have a speedrunning mode. Crypt of the Necrodancer, which is like a dungeon crawler kind of game, has a speedrun mode where it puts a timer in the bottom corner. So if you go speedrun mode, you're ready to go.
That is really cool. That's recognizing
Shovel Knight's developers. Shovel Knight is actually a pretty big indie game. Their developers were on the couch at a GDQ. They patched out something that kind of ruined it for speedrunners. So they put the glitch back in on the next patch.
Oh, nice.
Because they spoke to the community and the community were like, "Can you give us this back?" And they're like,
Yeah,
sure.
That is really cool. But anyway, we'll wrap everything up. Jay, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Jamel, once again, a pleasure.
Thank you as always. It's a pleasure to be here. And and thank you, Louis, for this brilliant experience.
Oh, I'm really glad that you guys have enjoyed yourselves and kind of come into the studio and see how it's done on another end.
Yeah, we appreciate you taking us under your wing today, showing us the studio and so forth.
I've been doing this for years. So.
How have you found us, like our little way of doing things?
Okay, so I've been doing radio and like shows for 8 years, and I can say